Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'm thrilled to see that the administration is pushing some incentives for people to buy some electric vehicles. And look, I would love to be able to get an electric vehicle at some point. At this point, a little out of my price range, even with some of the incentives. But if I were to have gotten one, and I had looked at the Tesla, and then quickly turned it aside because of all of the horrible things that I've heard that go on in their factories and their treatment of their workers. But for me, if the auto companies start building electric vehicles here, union-made electric vehicles, there's no reason I won't buy one. There's no reason I think American workers won't buy them, especially if we see the kind of incentives that are coming out of the White House's plan. Again, good policy. And here to share some thoughts on this good policy, I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it is good to be with you as always.
So the car companies, Toyota, Tesla, the non-union, some foreign, they're really ticked off that the Biden administration has put this little caveat in that we're going to give a little extra to car companies that make electric vehicles and their workers have union rights. And I got to tell you, I don't care what they think.
Right. And the important thing to know, Rick, about this is that it's not like that buyers of those vehicles wouldn't get any tax credit. They would. But buyers of these electric vehicles that qualify, that are made by firms that provide prevailing wages, would get an additional tax rebate. Beyond that, it would go up from $7,500 to as high as perhaps $12,500 if the battery is also made in the United States.
Right.
So, I your decisions have consequences, right? If you want to try to bust unions or keep them out of your factory, or if you want to source more of your parts from overseas, there'll be less of an incentive for consumers to buy that car if what they're looking at is the tax rebate for doing that. I think this is one good way to jumpstart the demand for electric vehicles because there still is a bit of what we call a green premium, right? It costs a little more to make these cars. The battery technology is super expensive, but Ford, GM, the union automakers in particular, have announced more models that are going to come online over the next couple of years, many of which are going to be made in the United States in union shops. And so let's prime that pump a little bit and get it rolling. So I think it's a great idea, and it speaks to our values, that we value, better paid work, and companies that are that have a strong record with respect to the right organize, and that are making more of their products or sourcing more of their parts for the electric vehicles, particularly the battery, from the United States itself.
Yeah, and there's a simple solution to this. I mean, Toyota came out with a statement said it's blatantly biased. Well, we can fix that. Let your workers organize, pay them a reasonable wage, and we don't have those problems. See, for me, this is the smart policy that I wish we'd been passing for years, incentivizing rising tides that don't smash workers into the dock. To me, this seems like a smart policy, one that I'm actually fairly grateful for.
Yeah, same here. And so the House Democrats, it's part of their Build Back Better budget reconciliation package. Which I expect to, pass through that committee and then onto the floor of the House of Representatives. We, as you know, still have work to do in the Senate. That will be very important. But it's also, I think it's worth noting that Senator Schumer, the Senate Democratic leader, has been a longtime supporter of focusing that electric vehicle tax credit on vehicles that are made in the USA. And so I think that there'll be broad support for this proposal in the Senate as well. And again, it's not like you would not get a tax rebate for buying a Toyota that's an electric vehicle, it just wouldn't be as generous
right.
as it would be for buying the vehicle that is made by workers who are paid a decent wage.
Right. See, I would argue that that's kind of leveling the playing field. I mean, if you're creating these cars in places that have depressed wages, this is kind of the leveler, because we want high wage jobs. We want people who, I mean, I hate to bring Henry Ford into this, but we want workers who are going to be able to buy the products that they make. Yeah. This seems like, oh, I don't know, common sense.
Yeah, it's totally common sense. And you know, we have an enormous untapped market for EVs, and particularly with car makers starting to respond to Americans' desires, as you know, Rick, to buy SUVs or all-terrain vehicles, you're going to see more of that. And particularly as the battery technology gets better and better and it gets lighter weight and extends ranges, there's going to be greater interest in doing this, and we're playing catch up. I mean, yeah. We need to build this market fast. And here's what I don't want to have happen, and I think this is the important thing, is that as we make this transition, which will inevitably happen, we shouldn't replace the internal combustion engine with made-in-China electric vehicles. We should just not do that. And so having a policy like this that's geared towards cars that are made in the United States, I think is an important step on that journey.
No, I'm right there with you. Because look, I recently bought a new Jeep Wrangler. And,
go Jeep. Yeah.
And I love it. It's one of those dream things I've always wanted from the time I was a little kid. And now, you know, I'm thrilled to death with it. The problem is even still, it's still got a lot of foreign-made content. I was assembled in Toledo, Ohio. I love it, but you know, the supply chain, still a lot of foreign parts. I was looking at the Fords, the Ford Bronco made in Mexico. I was looking at the Escape that they've got, you know, built here in the U.S. but of Chinese components. So I'm looking at all this at this stuff, and I'm going, how's the best way to reshore some of our manufacturing so that our supply chains are here? Because a lot of auto companies are going, gee, we just can't get the chips and the parts that we need because they're made somewhere else. To me, this seems the perfect opportunity. This crisis is the perfect opportunity to reshore our manufacturing, to reshore our supply chains, and to make sure that I can buy a car that's better than 80% American content. And I know it sounds nationalistic, but the reality is I want my neighbors to have jobs too.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's nothing kind of jingoistic about it. It's about if you believe in a sustainable economy and you believe in supporting local communities, it does make sense to buy local. Absolutely. And so there's a couple of ways that we can accomplish that, and we can get more of those Jeeps and Fords and GMs and other cars to have higher U.S. content instead of lower U.S. content. Again, one is through these tax incentives to gear them the right way. And so if you're buying a car that has a U.S. battery in it, you get a bigger tax incentive. I think that's a good thing. The second thing we can do is to make sure that our trade agreements reflect that, you know, if it says should mean made in America,
right.
You know, not, you know, 50% made in America or 60% made in America. And so the USMCA, the relatively new trade agreement we have with Mexico and Canada, does elevate that percentage up quite a bit for North American content, and we need to build on that. I think that is also quite important. And then the third way we can do that is through our procurement policy. The government is a big buyer of vehicles, and in fact, it will buy a lot of electric vehicles, from school buses to cars that are needed in the various departments over the coming years. And it can set the standard and say, we're only going to buy vehicles that, you know, that are made by labor with prevailing wages and that are, you know, 60, 70, 80% or higher U.S. content. And the car companies will want to respond to that. And so there's a lot of levers that the Congress, that the administration can use, some of which are already being used, but we just need to crank them a little more. And we'll see that progress.
Yeah, we desperately need it. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Scott Paul. Scott's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org is their website. We'll make sure we get links out on social media on how you can check out the work that they do. Now, recently there was a panel convened by the U.S.-China Economic Security Review Commission. And one of the statements that came out of that is, we got to stop doing business in China. Corporate America has got to just stop, get off the drug, basically, stop with the cheap labor and lax environmental regulations, get off the CEO heroin, and stop doing business there. Is that possible?
Yeah. I mean, it will take some time, honestly, because I mean, look at the shelves of any store, Rick. Right. I mean, so it's not something that will happen overnight, but it does need to happen. And it also doesn't mean, and I think this should be very clear, that all of that work is going to come back to the United States. Some of it will inevitably go to some other countries as well. But those other countries aren't going to be building up their militaries, threatening their neighbors, and acting in nearly as an authoritarian fashion as the Chinese Communist Party does. And I think that's one of the important things. And so these experts, and I thought this was really fascinating. It's not like we need to set different rules. It's basically U.S. companies, particularly manufacturers, should unwind their operations in China as quickly as possible, because there is just too much risk associated with that. There's the theft of technology risk. There's the risk, again, that our supply chains aren't as resilient, that we lose some capacity here, and that we're also potentially building up a strategic competitor at the same time. And so I think these words were chosen very carefully, and they're very powerful. And if you look at what's happening inside of China, I mean, basically, Xi Jinping is president for life there, and he's consolidated control of the Chinese Communist Party, and he's making it far more nationalistic. And they have expansive notions in the Indo-Pacific region. And I'm not suggesting for a minute that we need to think about a shooting war with China or anything like that, but we do need to be smart about our economic policies, about our human rights policies, and instead of the business community saying, you know what, we went too far or this didn't work out. Basically, the businesses, big multinational companies, are contacting the Biden administration and saying, you know, those tariffs that we have on Chinese product, we should take those off, and we should just get some clarity about our relationship is going to be, because we want to start doing more business with China again. So they're clearly not getting the message here. And I don't think that they have the same recognition of what's at stake. They're just looking at their bottom line.
It's all about the next quarter, Scott. It's always about the next quarter.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't care about the pollution that's being spewed into the air because of the energy intensive factories in China, or the Uyghur labor, forced labor that's being employed, or the theft of technology or anything like that, as long as they can make a buck.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Scott, and we've talked about this before. I don't care about the theft of technology. If they're stupid enough to go over, no, I mean, serious, if they're dumb enough to go over there and hand over their technology, because as I understand, in order to do business in China, you've got to basically hand everything over. So if you were dumb enough to give it to them, I don't know where the surprise when they steal it is.
Right. Yeah, and the theft, I mean, just so you know, just so your listeners know, the scale of this is at least $300 billion worth a year of intellectual property. It could be as high as $500 or $600 billion a year. So it is not inconsequential. But you're right. It's like these multinational companies naively go into this thinking, oh, this, you know, what a great deal we get. We get all this below market labor. We have the Chinese government subsidizing these operations in a lot of different ways. We basically can pollute however we want, and then we can ship things back to the U.S. and we can make a huge margin. Now, if it seems too good to be true, it is too good to be true. And so they do have to face that intellectual property theft. And then they have to and as the Chinese government says, you know what? We want those Western companies out now because we have all the technology we need. Thanks very much. Now they're going to protest about it. It's like, come on.
You're right.
The time to do that was decades ago.
Yeah. The only thing I'd push back against is I don't see them as naive. I believe they got it. They got exactly what they wanted. They wanted short-term profit gains to line their pockets. They didn't care about American workers. They didn't even care about their products. It was all about how much could they fill into their pockets on the short term. Long term, that's somebody else's problem. And I think they thought the gravy train was never going to end, Go ahead.
I think you're absolutely right about that. I think the one thing they thought they were going to get was those billion Chinese consumers, right? And so I think that was what they thought they would get about this. But it turns out the Chinese government wants to boost up its own companies. And so as soon as there's rivals, they're going to push those Western brands out.
No, and that's it. And this is where I'm glad Biden is looking into reshoring manufacturing, some of this stuff. I think we have to do more of this. So last question I've got for you, because somebody's going to throw out, but Scott, you know, the Chinese are subsidizing their companies. Isn't that what we're doing through these incentives?
Well, there's two major differences. One is terms of scale, where, the Chinese Communist Party owns many of these firms. They're state-owned, so the U.S. government owns absolutely none of these firms that we're talking about in the United States, okay? And, it's trillions of dollars over 5 or 10 years in China in these industrial subsidies. We're talking about, at the most, a couple hundred billion dollars across all the industries here in the United States, from semiconductors to automobiles and clean energy. And so that's not even close. And then the other factor here is that we do invite in and have few restrictions on foreign investment. So you're right. If a Toyota, if a Honda wants to come set up shop in the United States, and they can do that. I hope that we can organize those factories, right? But they can do that. And in China, there's many more restrictions on it. And so the subsidies that it has is for, firms that it deems to be national champions, who it thinks is going to help the Chinese government. And the U.S. essentially does not discriminate.
We don't have any central planning. There's none of that here.
That's right.
That's just not our system. But I'm glad someone's thinking about what we've been talking about on this show for the last 16 years. it's a step in the right direction, and I'm happy to see it. And I'm glad you came and told us. Scott, I appreciate the time, as always. Great stuff.
Of course, Rick. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Good stuff. Our good friend Scott Paul. Make sure you check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. We'll get links out on social media. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.